All right, listeners and viewers, we are back with my amazing guest, Dr. Mark Klein, who's been sharing his views of the of wisdom from the aerial view. And I'm just telling you, it's so profound in a lot of ways because, you know, we talk in this disrupted world of ours about all this stuff coming at us, AI, globalization, privacy, cybersecurity, all these things, and they all agitate. They're all agitators. Disruption brings with it a tremendous amount of agitation and with that anxiety. There has to be some kind of framing mechanism. And what I found in this book, Mark, is the simplest idea has the most telling impact, and that is to step away from the noise. To step away from the disruption, to elevate yourself into the observing ego, to live above it, to look at it all with great dispassion, and then to sort through that. And I think that when you do that, I think that's where real meaning comes from. I know for me, I'll use the example of the podcast. This podcast came out of nowhere during the pandemic. And it came from a bunch of ideas that all got jostled together at the same time. One was, I'm in a world, and having been a business development executive in the ed tech world for 30 years, I suddenly had no way to have human interactions with people. I couldn't see them at offices. I couldn't see them at events. I couldn't talk with them. And I realized email and text were not going to do it. I had to have some way of engaging people. And so the podcast was offered to me serendipitously in the middle of that. And I came to realize it was my opportunity to connect with people. And as you've said, that's one of the two most important things we can do in life is really become good at something and create accomplishments and then create relationships and connections with other people. On that score, what I learned is the world is a lot different. So in the post-pandemic world, as I was building the audience for this podcast, I started getting a lot of connections and followers in my feed. And we now have about 25,000 people in this disrupted community. And my friends, who are always working at keeping me honest and grounded, will say to me, cynically sometimes or jokingly, oh, you have 25,000 friends? Yeah. How many of these do you really know? And so I realized after getting that kind of crap a couple of times, being out and about with friends, I thought, you know, I cannot know all these 25,000 people, but I can know more of them better. And so I went about the task or the exercise of reaching out to a couple people every other week, and I picked two or three, and I would look at their profile on LinkedIn where all these connections are coming. And I would pick the people that I thought I would be most interested in having a cup of coffee or a drink with, just by looking at what they were doing, who they were, some of the background they had. And I will tell you this, I've done this experience now for the 4 years since COVID. I have never missed in one of those coffee talks. I have never met someone or gone off the call and said, well, that was a colossal waste of time. It's never happened. And understand that my connections still play a role in my professional life. I'm still connecting with people who could become potentially clients and things. So there's that string attached to it. But I can say without hesitation, whether or not we are doing business together or helping each other to do business in our respective fields or anything, and in most cases, nothing to do with our respective fields, I have just benefited from meeting so many interesting
people.
Welcome
to being a doctor. It's the same thing.
Yeah. And I think one of the points you make about being a doctor is it's so similar to everyone else's job if we think about what our job really is. You realized very early on in your career, your total goal was make things better for other people. That puts you at the top of the 10 best mentions out there, Mark. You are clearly one of them.
I don't look at it that way. I'll give you an example. Talk about relationships. You know, I have a habit, which I've learned over the years. When I go into a restaurant, anywhere, a cup of coffee, anything, right? 100% of the time I ask the waiter or waitress's name. Always, 100% of the time. And I'd say at least three quarters of the time, they're a little stunned. Like, you want to know my name? Yeah, I want to know your name. You're not like this person who's, you know, you're not like this robot who's just delivering food to me. You're a human being. I'm interested in you, right? We may not become close friends, like you were saying, but I do actually care about you. And as I said earlier, I'm more concerned with you than I am with me. Look, I'm at the age where I've had a very fortunate life, unbelievably fortunate. I always used to joke, I was at dinner one night, a number of years ago, I said to one of, we were about eight of us around the table, I go, you know, I think I'm like, you know, I must be the second luckiest person in the world, but I don't know who the luckiest is. And one of my friends said, that would be Ringo Starr. You know, so it was funny, right? But that's how I feel. I'm unbelievably fortunate. So, but I get my mission. I get why I'm here. So if I can help somebody, and when you ask a waiter or waitress's name, you have made them a human being instantaneously, right? And that counts way more than the tip you leave on the table. They're not, I mean, I'm not saying I ask their name and I don't leave a tip. I leave a tip, but I do it for a reason. I'm not doing it for me. I'm thinking, okay, this person is running around like a crazy person. People are probably yelling at him or her about the food being cold or late, whatever. And I'm much more interested in them. So just that little teeniest thing that everybody can do, you don't need an MD to do that, right? It makes a difference, but because it's
it makes a huge difference. That is a relationship.
People go, now, come on, it's a 2 minute. No, right. That's a relationship. You've established, like you do with what you're doing.
You know, I think, yes. And I think we both share that in common. And we talked about in our first episode about how we were brought together by Larry Kirschbaum. But I want to use another Larry Kirschbaum observation. You know, what Larry taught me over the last 30 years that I've known him, I think in life, the people you acquire as friends have two things going for them. They either have, you know, when you think about it, you have tons of friends and you can't possibly give those friends the benefit of as much time as you'd like. So why would you add others to the mix and only diminish that? The only reason why you would do that is if there was something additive. And in my view, there are two things that are additive. Bringing more people into your network, into your den, into your tribe that share values in common. That's worthwhile. They have values that I share that I want to make sure I don't forget about. I don't ever want to forget to be generous. I don't ever want to forget to be non-judgmental. I don't ever want to forget to be kind when it doesn't serve my interest. Those are the things that people with shared values help you sustain because we all stray. I think the other trait that I look for in newfound friends that I collect is they have values that I covet. They're values that I don't have, but they're values that I covet. And one of the things, looking back to my friendship of 30 years with Larry, that I coveted with him is I learned from Larry, I want to be the kind of person that people look forward to seeing. I want to be the kind of person that people look forward to hearing from. You never get an email, a text message, a call from Larry where you're not looking forward to get back on the phone and reconnect with him. And I think there are many people out there that are like Larry. I think you're one of them. But I think that's an important part of the message of the aerial view is when you're in that aerial view, you're asking us to self-actualize. You're asking us to imbue ourselves with our most commanding superpowers, our inner powers. And one of those has to be how we practice good faith with others and in the company of others and how we develop relationships through that practice.
Well, if you buy into the fact that we have a purpose and that, you know, my view based on in the book, the first part of the book is looking at clues that help us decide what that purpose is. I didn't just pull it out of thin air, right? So I try and make the case just from looking at clues in science and in life, what our purpose is. If you buy the fact that yes, it makes sense that we're here to make this evolution to caring more about others than ourselves, then you start to, then everything changes. Because then you're only focused on one thing. So judging others becomes a really bad idea. First of all, you're mostly going to get it wrong, right? So how many times have you said, you know, you try not to be judgmental, but you meet somebody and you go, oh, that guy is just, and then you find out, actually, that guy is really great. And you got that completely wrong, right? So that's, you know, we get it wrong all the time, right? That's why you have to continue to be, to force yourself. And I everything I talk about in this book, I've gotten wrong. But that's okay, because that's the point, to evolve. I haven't shot anybody, I haven't killed anybody, I haven't injured anybody on purpose. I've not tried to be cruel to people. You know, I don't have any, you know, the things I've done in my life I might not be proud of, but I don't have anything that's really particularly heinous. But still, I could have done better. And then I stop and I go, okay, well, okay, you didn't get it right when you were 18 in this particular situation. That's okay. As long as you're getting it right now, that's the point. You're preparing. Life is preparation. You're making that transition, right? So it takes, you know, we talked earlier in one of the last episode about how we can take some what's in here, these tools, to help us with our life in the street view, because we live in the street view. Can't hang out in the aerial view all the time. You can get that. You can go to the aerial view anytime you want and you need to. And I recommend, once people, as I said in the book, once you become, once you develop that skill to ascend to the aerial view at whenever you want, it's the most powerful thing you can learn in your life. It is the single greatest skill, and it's learnable by everybody, right? But we do live in the street view. So you have to take what you learn in the aerial view and apply it in the street view. Not to be judgmental, to care about others, to help people, to be kind, to be honest, to be generous, as you said. These are things. But there are tools. The subtitle of the book, the title of the book is Wisdom from the Aerial View. But the subtitle is The Superpower That Can Change Your Life and This World. Because ascending to the aerial view is one of the superpowers that we have. And it does change your perspective and changes the way you view everything. There are a couple of other things. There's a very famous book. I know you've probably read it many times, and hopefully many people have. It's Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. And when I read that a number of years ago, I was struck by the fact that what he learned from his experience in the concentration camp was that the one thing he had control over was how he interpreted the world, how he felt about anything, right? And so that's how he got through. He said, one thing you can't take away from me is my interpretation of my experience, how I feel about things. That I always tell people, that is a superpower. Don't ever give that away. Don't allow other people to determine how you feel. Why would you do that? So this is thing I talk about in the book, you know, this whole thing now about microaggressions. What's a microaggression? You know, saying thing that sets somebody off, which is completely backwards, right? There's no such thing as setting somebody off. We all have control of how we feel. If you're stupid enough to let somebody else decide, I shouldn't say stupid, but if you're inexperienced enough to allow somebody to determine how you feel, you've got to learn how not to do that. Don't ever give that power away.
Right.
You know, my friends and I grew up in New York, and we would have these, what we would call rank out sessions, where we'd insult each other. We were in like junior high school, right? And we'd just insult each other as much as we can, right?
This is very junior high.
Can you imagine that today, though? I mean, oh my God, you said the wrong thing.
Oh,
so that's what we did. And I learned two things, right? One is that the faster you responded, the better you got, right? The more applause you got from your buddies, right? And also that all the power lies with the recipient of the insult, right? So you can say anything. I used to tell my friends now, I go, you can try to offend me. Good luck. Give it your best shot. It's not going to happen. Why? Because I'm not giving you that power. I don't care who you are. You know, you shouldn't give it to people, strangers. You shouldn't give it to politicians. You shouldn't give it to even your kids, your spouse. Don't ever give that away. That's yours, right? Don't let anybody else determine how you feel, right? So that's a superpower in itself.
But I want to challenge that a little bit, because when you go to the extreme of a life like Viktor Frankl's, where he's talking about years of torture and concentration camps and years of watching depraved behavior over an extended period of time to many people over which he had no control to change the outcome. I think about tragedy in a very similarly dark way, you know, having lost my grandmother to an extraordinary violent death.
Which you shared with me. Right?
To be murdered. Right. And I'm not sure. I mean, on the one hand, yes, I have a choice over how I can respond to that event. And the choice I've made over the last 30 years has been pretty intentional and deliberate. I became very impassioned against the death penalty, and I write about the reason why we have to eliminate the death penalty, because I couldn't even imagine the idea of taking a second life that day or any day subsequent because of what happened to her. That just would make it worse. It wouldn't make it better. The other thing I've learned from that is how to take that experience and turn it toward good. And that's why my educational efforts with the Alliance for Adult Ed and with the Clinton Global Initiative and all those things is centered around helping people like the 14-year-old that killed my grandmother that didn't have the benefit of being in school. He was a dropout. And he didn't have the hope that accords with having teachers and those around him caring about him. And I think that had a profound impact on his behavior that particular day and his life. And so I guess what I'm asking you is, yes, I've learned over 30 years that I can control my response to that. But then there are moments when suddenly an image triggers me or an event triggers me, and I'm right back in that very dark moment where it all happened an instant ago. So does that mean I'm 99% in control, or what does that mean? You know what I'm saying? I want to understand that, because that doesn't go away. And I'm telling you, certain deaths, and my grandmother's one of them, the bad stuff doesn't go away. I hate to tell people that are going through that now that it's going to get better. And it does get better. You know, I'm not saying it doesn't, but it doesn't go away.
So I have two things I would say about that. First is, you have embraced the idea that you're in control of how you feel, because when you feel it, you pull yourself back. You don't stay in that moment. You still don't endorse the death penalty. You still have compassion and for other people. So you do pull yourself back. So look, we're human beings. You know, I discussed in the book how to deal with anxiety, and I get anxious. But now what I do is I learn how to control it. So it's not that I don't get anxious, but I crush it as soon as it happens, or pretty close to it. And sometimes I'm not quite as good as I should be, so it might take me a little longer. But still, I get it. You know, in terms of tragedy, we've talked about this previously, that death is the greatest clue of all. Everybody's going to die. It's 100% certain. Mortality among humans
remains 100%. That's an extraordinary clue. That's a great way to look at it.
You know, I was going to title one of my other books, "If Abraham Lincoln Hadn't Been Assassinated, He'd Still Be Dead Now." Right? I thought, that's a pretty good title. A little long, but it's a good title, right? Because it's true, right? Everybody's going to die. Death is a certainty, right? Mortality among humans remains 100%. That's the biggest clue of all, right? Don't focus on that. Tragedies are going to happen. People are going to die. Some are going to die younger than we wish they would. Some are going to get terrible illnesses. Believe me, I've seen my share, right? And then I pull back and I get to the aerial view and I go, okay, hold on a minute. That's not the point, right? I saw so many young women die of breast cancer. And the thing that would bring tears to my eyes as a doctor all the time, get really choked up, was when I had to diagnose a young mother. She had a kid who's a year old, just delivered this baby a year ago, and now she has, you know, what ends up being very severe breast cancer. You know, some would survive, a lot wouldn't. Tragic, a young child losing their mother. I mean, okay, I lost my dad at 21. That's a lot different than never knowing your mother, right? And so I can't minimize that, but I can, from the aerial view, appreciate, okay, you know, it's not that don't take it too seriously. That's a little harsh. It's mean take it in perspective, right? This is the way the world works. Your mission doesn't change. Everybody goes through stuff. Not everybody has their grandmother murdered. I grant you that. But, and that's a hard one. But from the aerial view, you stop and you appreciate, okay, it doesn't have to devastate me. It doesn't have to ruin my life. I still have to stay on course, right? And you did, right? You somehow said, you could easily have said, hang that kid, you know, put him to death. He took my grandmother's life. How dare he, right? And when people say that, I get it. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. I get it, right? But from the aerial view, which you have come to a different perspective, taking a second life won't bring my grandmother back. Why ruin another life? That's a super generous, kind, advanced way of thinking, right? It really is. But when you're in the aerial view, it's easy to understand how you can get there, right? So crap is going to happen in the street view. The street view is a mess, right? What's good in the street view? Laughter. I love laughter. Humor, one of my favorite things. Love, romance, flowers, beauty, creativity, music. There's a lot of good stuff in the street view. there's a hell of a lot of bad stuff: hunger, cruelty, violence, depravity. I mean, we're surrounded by it, right? Dirt, filth. You know, these things can. That's why when you get to the aerial view, you take it in perspective. You only have to focus on your role. How am I doing in this evolution? You're gonna die, right? Make the transition. Help as many people as you can. That's a successful life, whether it's a day or 100 years. That's really not the point. Longevity is not the point, right? And so how do we get, one thing we talked about, anxiety, right? For instance, once you understand that you're in complete control of how you feel, and I'll tell you why you are. So an event, here's an analogy I use. So let's say you go on a safari and you watch a lion take down a wildebeest and rip it limb from limb. Now, if I watch that, I'd be like this, right? Right? The lion's not particularly upset about it. The lion's just going about his business. This is what lions do. They got to eat. There's a wildebeest. Bang. So why do I have a different reaction than the lion? What's the difference? Because we've both seen the same event. But from my perspective, I've now interpreted it in my brain. My brain has manipulated these images and said, that image is horror to me. I'm going to define that in this brain as horror. The lion looks at it and goes, I'm going to define that as lunch, right? So our brains interpret everything. 100% of that happens. When I say this to people, and I don't know how you're going to accept, you and your audience are going to take this, but things don't have any intrinsic value. It's what we assign that value, right? So the tearing up of a wildebeest to the lion is no big deal. And to us, we've assigned it, or some of us have, a sense of horror. All the hunters might say, I don't care about that. Whatever it is, we interpret everything through our brain. 100% of the input we get from our five senses is then interpreted. There's no intrinsic value to it. There's no intrinsic value to wonderful things or horrible things. It's what how we interpret it. Therefore, since our brain is making these decisions, we then have the ultimate control to decide how we want to react to that, how we want to interpret that, what we want our response to be.
Right.
That's the superpower.
To our listening and viewing audience, this has been Mark Klein talking to us about wisdom from the aerial view and harnessing your inner superpower to change the world as we know it. I love that subtitle as much as I love the title. We're going to take a quick break. And when Mark comes back for episode 4 and our final episode, what we're going to do is talk about how he's translated this learning into a blueprint for day-to-day activities. So how do you take the aerial view and the wisdom of the aerial view and put it into practice? Stay tuned, stay with us, stay engaged, stay disrupted. We'll be right back.